the biggest knock on bodybuilding today is the amount of drugs they use, which it's not good. I'll say it right away. I have many friends in the bodybuilding industry. The worst that could happen, I wasn't married. I didn't have a child. I had some bills. I had a car. I had a house. But what's going to happen? I go bankrupt? Okay. What are they going
to
do?
When it comes to that, how did you transition from being a police officer to being in the clinic industry?
For 12 years while I was in law enforcement, I studied everything there was to know about hormones, about the endocrine system, about anabolics, about how the body functions, about biomechanics, because I was going to be Mr. Olympia.
What was taking like your biggest expense out of this clinic?
Staff. But when I split with him, I had less than $7,000, and I had no money because I was in debt. Less than $7,000 was like $6,900 maybe. And the bills that month were, I think, $9,300 or $9,400. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I have less than 2 weeks or we're shut down. We're closed. Education costs money. Every failure can be a win if you learn. I say it all the time. I say, I never lose. I either win or I learn.
All right. We're here with another special episode with a great friend of mine, Tomo. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So for someone who doesn't know you.
Yes.
Who is Tomo behind the scenes?
Oh, wow. So that's a loaded question. I mean, if we're going to do the whole story, I'm an ex-bodybuilder, ex-law enforcement officer, current entrepreneur. I do some podcasting through Tomo Talks. I'm involved in some social media, and honestly, my main focus right now is to bring my medical business here to Dubai. That's why I'm here right now. You and I are doing business with this. You're actually helping me.
I appreciate you telling that. Despite that, I feel like, I mean,
it's not a sales thing.
I feel like this is something of a gesture that I want to show you. I wanted to show you how we can help you settle, heal, and thrive at the same time.
It's amazing, but you did this out of the, with a lot of kindness, with a lot of emphasis on wanting to help me and support me and bring me here, and it's been amazing so far, bro. It's not a plug, guys. I'm serious. It's not a plug. He actually is really helping me. We're communicating all the time. We're going over different properties, all kinds of things. So I'm very appreciative, man. But that's why I'm here.
And definitely, we got to celebrate that when we officially launch it.
Yes,
it happens.
It's happening soon. It's happening soon. Yeah, Aspire Rejuvenation Clinic Dubai is going to be very, very cool.
So for someone, you told them about being a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go a little bit back.
Sure.
When you were a child, is there a certain memory that fires your ambition that you have today? Is there something that truly made you who you are today?
You know, it's funny. My childhood, I didn't think my childhood was anything different than anybody else. When I talk about it out loud, when people, ask me questions about it, they're like, oh, you had a little bit of a traumatic childhood, So father and mother got divorced when I was young. Typical in the West, unfortunately, They got divorced. I was probably 7 or 8 years old. The person who I grew up with as my father figure after that tragically committed suicide. Not in front of me, didn't see anything, but it happened, and I knew it happened.
So it still impacted you in a way, I would
assume. Of course. With two father figures basically ripped out of my life, in tragic ways. One in divorce, which is tragic, and the other one through death, also tragic. So I grew up mainly around women, which was interesting, because most people wouldn't think, that I have a feminine side. I'm sweet and kind, a big teddy bear, right? So I gravitated towards very masculine men. And where is a young boy in America that his mother's working all the time? Where am I going to find things like that? Television, movies. I start gravitating towards people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jean-Claude Van Damme. I was born in 85. I actually turn 40 tomorrow, by the way.
This is the thing. He doesn't even look 40.
Thank you, mashallah. Exactly.
Away from the evil eyes.
Yeah. So, my birthday's tomorrow. I lost my train of thought. Where was I going with this? So I'm going to like looking for masculine men, masculine role models. Yeah. Born 85. So the masculine role models back then, they were big, muscular, larger than life people. And what am I seeing? I'm saying, okay, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, all these guys, they're muscular. They're big. They're working out. They're getting pumped up. So 13 years old, I'm like, I need to get in the gym. So I start working out, I start getting into bodybuilding, I start watching Pumping Iron over and over and over again, the documentary from 1976, and this becomes my mindset and lifestyle that I want to be a professional bodybuilder.
It was a different era back then. Even the bodybuilders there is much more different than today.
Of course. Well, the bodybuilders back then, you know, the biggest knock on bodybuilding today is the amount of drugs they use, which it's not good. I'll say it right away. I have many friends in the bodybuilding industry. I have been very involved in the bodybuilding industry. The drugs are very bad. And that's part of what I look forward to changing in the environments is the idea of what hormones do and looking at hormones, because really steroids in bodybuilding, they're no different than a lot of the hormones people take for wellness. Just they're taking 20 times the amount. You take 20 times the amount of anything. You take 20 times the amount of Tylenol for a headache, you're going to die. You take 20 times the amount of certain vitamins, it'll actually kill you. People don't know this. So of course, you take 20 times the amount of a hormone, yeah, you're going to get big muscles, but you're going to die of a heart attack when you're, you know, when you're 35, 40. Not worth it. So that's part of, you know, my journey as well, seeing that whole perspective. But, you know, searching for masculinity, it led me to being a bodybuilder, led me to being interested in being a larger-than-life man. And then I think that also led me into being a law enforcement officer too, because I was still seeking that masculine imperative, right? That masculine influence. And it led me to a career in law enforcement where I gravitated towards masculine men who were, I mean, who's going to be more masculine than police officers, in my opinion, back then? Carrying a gun, you're protecting people, you're the good guy. It kind of makes sense. So my childhood journey of losing my father figures really led me down the path of where I am now. And, you know, thank God this happened. I love every painful point of my past, because thank God it happened, because it led me right to where I am right now, sitting with you in Dubai, setting up businesses. I have chills right now, even talking about it. I'm so grateful.
It's interesting that you say that a lot of the Americans that I know, they usually don't travel beyond America.
Correct.
And the most likely thing they have a document close to a passport is their driving license. So
yeah, pretty
based on that, I mean, America's huge. I love it. I love America. How
beautiful
big
country.
It is. 50 states?
Maybe 51.
That's what I get confused. I still get confused that there's that, but yeah.
We're not going to take Canada, I promise.
So when it comes to the 50 states, I mean, it's a big country, big continent.
Yes.
Just exploring it itself can take a lifetime to explore the whole
Absolutely.
Place.
Yeah.
And when you think about that, why is it typical for Americans not to travel?
It's funny. It's not. And you know what's really sad? And it's one of the worst things that I ever see is when I hear somebody that's never left their city or never left their
even that. Yeah. They never left their town.
I know.
Yeah.
It's insanity to me. It's a big world. We everybody says it's a small world. Oh, it's a small world because social media and news and TV and it's such a small world. It's a very large world, and culturally, people are very ignorant. And I don't know why in America specifically, they are so weary of venturing outside of that American system.
Hmm.
Because you should hear people back home in the United States.
Do you think they still have like assumptions about Dubai and the UAE?
They have assumptions about the entire Middle East.
Oh, wow.
They have assumptions about Russia. They have assumptions about Europe. They have assumptions about everything. You know, I think that Dubai has made a very good name for itself, and image-wise, it's clear. There's money in Dubai. But it's funny, I hear these ridiculous things. Oh, well, you only see on social media the 1% of the population is rich. Everybody else is broke. They can barely eat. They're starving. They're working like slaves. I'm like, where? Because I've been all over the Emirates. I've been all over the Emirates and I haven't seen any of that. I said, so where are you hearing this?
Let's see.
That nowhere. It's the thing is that these rumors are the same all over the place, but they have the same rumor about Russia. I was going to go to Russia. My visa got denied for whatever. Ex-law enforcement stuff. My visa got denied and my friend was sending me pictures of Russia. I'm like, I was literally told that Russia was this cold, dark, like non-friendly place. And then you look at the Russian subways compared to the New York subways. You look at all these things. You look at the safety of like the United States and the safety of people in Russia, safety of people in Europe, maybe besides France and England, that's a little bit mess right now. Safety in Dubai. Safety in, how about just all of the GCC region? I feel so safe here, where in the United States, I have to sit in restaurants and I sit with my back towards a wall so I can see the entrances just in case, because I have to protect who I'm with and protect myself. Here in Dubai, I have zero worries, and people don't understand. They don't realize, like, this is what America used to be.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be safe and prosperous and lights. There was a shining light coming from the sky, you know? Now it's like, man, there's so much crime. There's so much negativity. It's really a bummer. But yeah, I think people just don't travel, you know, to sum that up, because they've been told to be afraid and they believe it.
Do you think that the reason you were able to leap from being a police officer to now being in the wellness clinic, and owning a wellness clinic, was because you didn't have that fear, or did you have that fear?
So I asked an employee of mine, someone that I work with. Her name is Jade. She's like my right hand.
Mm.
She's awesome. She knows me probably better than I know myself at this point, I think. And I asked her one time, I said, what's one word that would describe me? And she said, fearless. I was like, interesting. I said, I never would claim that myself, because I feel like I have fear. Hmm. You know what I mean? I think everybody recognizes they have certain types of fear. And I mean, I was fearful to leave my law enforcement career, because I was looking at it, and I'm like, this is what I know. But then I thought about the other side. I said, I don't feel fulfilled here. Here's law enforcement. I don't feel fulfilled. I don't feel like truly happy. I feel there's something missing. I have a passion here. I know what I'm talking about. I've studied it my whole life. And what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen, I wasn't married. I didn't have a child. I had some bills. I had a car. I had a house. But what's going to happen? I go bankrupt? Okay. What are you going to do? Oh, my credit score suffers for 5 years? And then I just go back to being a police officer. What? The risk versus reward. People are so afraid of risk.
Mm-hmm.
The risk averse get nowhere. That's the truth. You know, why am I here in Dubai? This is risky to a lot of people. For an American to come to the Middle East to expand his clinic, like, why don't you just keep expanding the United States? I said, because I see opportunity here, and people, not only, it's not about money. It's about the impact.
Hmm.
When I start hearing friends getting stem cell treatments and they're no good here because clinics are not doing it the right way, they're using imaging tech, they're not even sourcing it properly, they're not storing it properly. When I hear there's no peptides and HRT clinics that are top level, top tier, that are getting it from viable medical, you know, resources. When I see that, I'm like, this is a golden opportunity, but also the people need it here.
Hmm.
This is something that's how everything works with me in my head.
It feels like an untapped potential that is yet to come for you to unlock.
Which, in my opinion, it's crazy to me that it's not already here. Because Dubai is so innovative in so many ways. If I can just give 0.25% of innovation into this market, into Dubai, into UAE, I'm going to be so grateful. I'll be so excited for it.
So when it comes to that, how did you transition? Maybe give a short summary.
Sure.
For the people who don't know, how did you transition from being a police officer to being in the clinic industry?
Yeah. So we can go back into my love for bodybuilding and my love for fitness. And I started lifting weights at 13 years old. I did my first bodybuilding competition at 17 years old. It was either 18 or 19. I believe it was 19 years old. I told my coach, his name was Don DeVito. May he rest in peace. He was talking to me and I told him I wanted to be a professional bodybuilder. I want to go to Mr. Olympia competition.
Okay. You had that vision from the get-go.
19 years old. Listen, 19 years old,
You're crazy ambitious.
You're crazy ambitious, but you're probably a little bit crazy. The percentage of bodybuilders that go to Mr. Olympia is minute. It's so small that it's almost immeasurable. The people that even get their pro card, it's almost immeasurable. It's very, very small, just like any professional sports, any professional athletes. So I told him, I said, I want to be Mr. Olympia. I'm going to Mr. Olympia. I'm going to be a professional bodybuilder. That means I need to take steroids. So I told him. He chuckled and he said, okay, kid. He's like, you don't need to take steroids, but what I do want you to do, I want you to get your blood work done.
Hmm.
He told me to get my blood work done in 2003, 2004, when nobody was doing this. This was not a thing. This was not like it is now, where people are talking about hormones and peptides and nobody was doing this.
People were just injecting before then.
Before it was just abusive anabolics.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought was the right path. He tells me to get my lab work done. And if I think about it, that's probably the journey that started me down this medical side. So I get my lab work back and my testosterone level naturally, it's like 1470 nanograms per deciliter. The typical testosterone level right now is between, they say normal testosterone level is between 300 and 900. So I'm at almost 15.
It's a big range though.
It's a big range, but also the range is skewed by medical, the insurance companies.
So even if you say like you're 300, they say, oh, okay, you're normal. You're within the range, but that's not the most optimal thing.
Maddening thing for me in the medical industry. That's the most maddening thing, you know, but yeah. So I come back and I'm well above normal. And I said, okay. And he's like, you're basically naturally on steroids. He's like, you're basically already naturally on steroids because your testosterone high is what that's the main hormone for a man. So at that point, I said, okay, well, I don't need to take them now, but I'm going to study everything that I possibly can. And for 12 years while I was in law enforcement, from age 21 until 2018, only 7 years ago, getting close to 7 years, I studied everything there was to know about hormones, about the endocrine system, about anabolics, about how the body functions, about biomechanics, because I was going to be Mr. Olympia, remember?
And you were doing it at a time where there's no ChatGPT.
Oh, no.
There's no, I think the internet was minimum.
Google wasn't even what Google is.
Maybe it has like forums.
There were some forums or things like that, but mostly it was books. I had to find books. I had to find medical manuscripts. I was reading books on endocrinology. You guys know how boring books on endocrinology are. If I read them now, I'd be falling asleep, you know, but I was so passionate about it, but that's what led me down this path where when I was ready to leave law enforcement, I didn't know what to do and I really wanted to get out of the job. And one of my friends is like, you know, everything there is to know about hormones, about endocrine system, about wellness, about peptides, you know, all this stuff from all your years of studying and bodybuilding. Why don't you go and work for this company and just see what you can do for them? And that's exactly what I did.
And you quit law enforcement from that point on and just went to the clinic.
I left at the end of September 2018. In the first week of October 2018, I started working for the medical clinic. And that led me down the path actually forcibly starting my own because I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. I never wanted to be a business owner.
So what made you decide?
Alhamdulillah that it happened, right? I mean, thank God. Thank God that it happened. I was forced to. I called myself an accidental entrepreneur all the time because I did not want to, I didn't even know what I was doing in business. I had no clue. I didn't know how to set up an LLC. I didn't know how to structure a company. I didn't know how to hire people, how to fire people, how to deal with HR problems. I didn't know any of this stuff. I had to learn all of this stuff myself. And when I left that company because there was some activity that I didn't, that was not favorable. Some legal activity. So I had to basically leave that company and make a decision. Do I go back to police work? Awful feeling. You couldn't pay me enough money. You couldn't pay me $100 million a month to go back to law enforcement today in America. No way. So do I go back to police work or do I risk everything, every dollar and say, well, what's the worst that could happen?
So what do you mean when you said risking every dollar? Do you mean like
I literally was
all your savings you put into that?
Every dollar of my savings, I maxed every credit card out to the max.
Wow.
Then I stopped paying my credit cards because I couldn't afford it. I took a loan out and I stopped paying my car payment and stopped paying my mortgage. My credit score, if you guys know American credit score system, what does it go to 800?
Yeah.
Or 850? My credit score went down to low 500s, which basically
it would be very hard to get a loan.
You may as well be zero at that point. So I stopped paying all my bills and I put every dollar that I had into the business and I didn't even pay myself for the first 18 months of business. There were times when I would sleep in my office. There was time
in the clinic.
In the clinic. I would sleep in the clinic. I would sleep in the IV chair. I sleep in the IV chair. I would shower.
You didn't give yourself an IV while you
sleep. No, but somebody else did sometimes. I would do that. I would shower at the gym.
Okay.
There were times when I went to the grocery store and I thought I had, you know, $30-something in my account and I was excited, going to buy some chicken and some rice. And then I go to the grocery store and some insurance or something came out and I basically go to the checkout, declined. I'm like, debit card. So I go debit card because my credit cards are maxed out. And it goes decline and I'm like, impossible. I pull my phone up and it said like a dollar. It was like $1.11. So $1.11, and I'm like, I told the lady, I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't have any money, and I embarrassedly walked out, just literally left. I remember going back to the apartment that I was renting, that I was already backed up on rent 2 months, and I found a can of, you ever see the canned chicken? Canned chicken and a bag of Uncle Ben's rice. I made that last for about a day and a half.
Wow.
That's fun. I love these stories because it makes me excited.
How did that moment you felt, like, being in the struggling moment, it's not an easy, like, knowing your savings is all gone, knowing your credit card is maxed out, mm-hmm. knowing you can't loan any more money.
Stressful.
How are you so assured that your future is going to be bright after this?
You know what's funny is that I wasn't. I had no surety whatsoever in my mind. The way that I thought about it, I said, well, if I just act like I do it or I'll die, it's kind of easy. Where it's like, I'm not going to starve to death. If worst comes to worst, I'm not going to starve to death. I know that. I can always go back to police work. So if I'm going to do it, I may as well. And people think, I'm going to say people think that going 100% is going 100%. Most people go 20%, if that. Most people think that 20% is 100%. I've noticed that.
True.
When I went to 100%, I'm like, I didn't sleep. I didn't sleep for days sometimes. I would go into the office, and I'm not afraid of saying this. I would go into the office, and I'd cry before I walked in the office. And then when I left the office, I'd cry when I left. But I never stopped working. I would leave my office, and I would go to a gym down the street, get my workout in, and I was big and jacked, and, you know, in bodybuilding days. You saw the pictures. I still looked like that.
You're huge, man. I mean, yourself, by now, you're huge. I don't know how huge you were back then.
It was intimidating.
How much you weigh now?
Probably about 230.
So how much are you wearing then?
Probably 245 at my biggest. Only 15 pounds more, but the body composition was a little bit different. I had no body
mass. Muscle mass was huge.
Yeah, I mean, I think I got measured at Jewel's shop at Custom Made Reality. Shout out to them. I got measured, and they measured my arms at 18 and a half inches. I was like, they were like, oh, you got really big arms, 18 and a half inches. I'm like, I used to be 21. With my bodybuilding brain.
So coming back to the story.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know.
What was your biggest expense out of this clinic?
Staff.
The staff, the paying.
Yeah, yeah, the staff and the rent. I remember, because I brought in a partner to help with funding in the beginning. We ended up parting ways because he somewhat almost tried to steal the business concept from me. But I strategically did it well, where I owned this clinic in Orlando, Florida. He opened one technically in Sarasota, Florida.
And you knew about it.
And then we were going to combine
into
one company. But he owned this one, I owned this one. We're going to combine 50-50 and make corporation and then grow from there. Towards the end of when we were supposed to sign the contract, and that was my fault. I didn't sign the contract first, but I'm grateful I didn't. God's a very
blessing in disguise.
God's a very good planner. God likes to plan things and teach you lessons. But he tried to basically say, hey, I'm taking 75%. You can have 25%. You're no longer the CEO. I'm running everything. What he didn't realize is his Sarasota clinic was not profitable. And my Orlando clinic was very profitable because I was in Orlando. His clinic was not running well. But when I split with him, I had less than $7,000 in the bank account, and I had no money because I was in debt. So less than $7,000 was like $6,900 maybe. And the bills that month were, I think, $9,300 or $9,400. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I have less than 2 weeks or we're shut down. We're closed.
So what did you do?
I never stopped. I was on the phone every single minute that I possibly could have been. And when I wasn't, when the clinic wasn't open, because we were open like 9 in the morning until 6 p.m. or so. And when I wasn't calling people and wasn't trying to find new patients and wasn't posting on social media and doing lives and saying, come in or free this, free that, trying to get people in so we can generate some income, I would go to the gym. I would go work out. I'd get pumped up and people would notice because I'm 6'3", I'm 240 pounds, all muscle. And then I would put a booth in the front of the gym and I would hand out t-shirts.
Oh, wow.
And I would hand out flyers and then I would hand out and I would have my practitioner come with me sometimes and he would give free B12 shots. So, you know, I'm doing whatever I can to garner business into the clinic. And we ended up obviously making it, but it still took a very long time. But again, what's the worst that could happen? I'm not going to starve to death. I'm in America. I can call my mom. I can call a family member. I can call a friend.
The least he could do is go live in your mom's basement.
Someone's going to feed me a sandwich if I'm going to die of starvation. It's not going to happen. Or I can go become a police officer again.
Mm.
But if I don't put in 100% effort and I just quit, I didn't even try. That's what most people do all day. Most people that are doing anything that even go anywhere, they don't even put in 50% effort. And then when they quit, no wonder they feel bad. They feel bad because they didn't try for real. Really trying is a different thing, you know?
How do I know if I'm trying or not trying?
I never feel like I'm trying. Even when people look at me like, you're insane. You don't stop. You are constantly going. You only slept this much hours. And when I'm in Dubai, I function very well here. I don't know why.
What's the reason?
The energy. There's something about the energy here that is just substantial. I feel energized here. I feel a sense of peace here. I feel a sense of motivation. There's kindness here. The air doesn't feel heavy. It's hot outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's June. For anybody watching this, June in Dubai, it's quite warm. But it doesn't feel heavy emotionally. It doesn't feel heavy like from a spiritual, soul perspective. I don't know how to explain it. Where sometimes when I go, you know, back home, sometimes if I'm going to, you know, if I'm in England or if I'm in France, there's just a negativity in the air of something. It's an air of negativity where here, everybody wants me to win. It's a strange phenomenon. And I don't know how to explain it to people unless they experience it.
Is it maybe because the people here are just as ambitious as you are just as thriving as you can potentially be? So they themselves succeeding here, living in a better condition.
Mm-hmm.
They want other people around them to succeed, especially people who are well off compared to the people who are not.
I think so. I think, you know, it's an energy exchange. I think people gravitate towards people like them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, we talk about your circle, right? Everybody talks about this, your inner circle, your network, you know, the saying your network is your net worth.
Do you believe that's true?
100%. I would not be here sitting with you right now if I didn't have my network. That's 100% true. I think Jewel actually connected us.
In a way, I think it was Giuliano.
Giuliano.
Yeah.
Right. Giuliano connected us. I think Giuliano, I connected through Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I know Jewel.
So everything, you know, in my networking capability, even from being able to make my clinic thrive, that all came through networking. My business education did not come from a business school. I didn't get an MBA. My business school was in private members clubs in Florida, where I surrounded myself by millionaires and billionaires. Well, how did you get in that circle? I did ridiculously risky things, like bought a Porsche when I shouldn't have. Like bought the private membership when I shouldn't have.
Was it worth it?
100%.
So you think someone should buy a luxurious car and...
It's made me tens of millions of dollars.
Just by buying a luxury car?
I bought a luxury car that got me into a group of people that led me into a private members club that literally made me tens of millions of dollars. I'm not joking. And I'm not saying it works for everybody. It was a calculated risk.
Do you think that's an intrinsic perspective that you mentioned? Is it more so that I bought the thing, or is it more so that you had experience in being a sales guy, that you're able to be able to communicate with the right people and then being able to sell something?
So networking's weird for a lot of people, because I think people go into a networking environment and they look at it in a way of, what can I get out of this?
Hmm.
And that is the worst way to network. When you go into a networking environment and you go into it like, what am I going to get out of this? What can I get from people? What can me? It's people like me see through that. If you come in a room with me and I see that you're only about yourself, I'm going to see right through it. And I may be respectful and I'll take your card and I'll shake your hand, but I'll probably never call you.
Is it because I'm by myself?
It's because you're only caring about yourself. And I think the true way of networking is to actually build relationships.
Hmm.
In relationships, you then can build business. That's how every piece of education that I've gotten from another person, from another business person, our education. My education through you did not come because I started asking questions about business. You weren't asking me questions about business in a measure of trying to get something from each other. We actually had conversations we became friendly, and then we started interacting in a business way. But we never started the conversation or the interaction with business first.
Mm.
We made a friendship connection. We had a mutual respect. And now we're here. Now I'm on your podcast and we're doing some business on the side. And inshallah, we do more business on the side and we bring more things together and we all prosper together. But without the friendship part first, the rest of it, people see through it.
So for most people that are hearing right now, how do they build that friendship after the first meeting? Do you suggest them that, like,
just be real, just be yourself. Why do you want to talk to somebody? Don't just come up to them. Hi, what do you do? What do you do for a living? Hi, what's your industry? Get out, guys. You're driving me nuts. Please don't do that to me ever. Please, for the love of God.
So how should they approach you?
Say hello. Hey, I'm John. Nice suit, bro. I like that. Nice watch. Nice shoes.
Compliment them.
Not even compliment. Find something about this person that you find in common.
Mm.
You understand what I mean? So, you know, if you're at a supercar meet, let's say you have a nice car. You want to go network with people? Go network with people that have similar interests. I like your Ferrari. I like your Lamborghini. You do anything to it? Yeah, I did that. Now you start talking. Where do you live? What do you do happens later, because that doesn't matter. You know, I got a kid seat in the back. How many kids do you have? 3. Cool. I have 2 daughters, sons. What are the age groups? Oh, we should get the kids together. Guys, just think about it in a way of making friends. Don't be so black and white thinking that you're there for business, because business is relationships. And the best business that I've ever done has been with friends and people that I mutually respect. And I do business with people that I mutually respect. I will never go outside of mine and yours relationship to do what you are already doing. Why? Because I want to pay you because you're my friend. Jewel, he's got a suit shop. He makes custom clothing and custom suits and shirts. Guess who's making all my clothes? Jewel. Because I want my money going in his pocket. I'm not going to Louis Vuitton.
He would do the same thing for you. He would rather go for a wellness clinic with you.
He is so ready to push the wellness clinic that it is absolutely great. He wants to push it harder than I do. He's like, I can't wait. He's like, I can't wait to get this thing off the ground, acting like it's his. Why? Because he wants me to succeed. Because me succeeding helps him succeed, helps you succeed, helps this succeed. Friendship. Find those mutual connections. That's networking 101 to me. And if you do it from that frame, you're going to flourish. Your network becomes your net worth because it's your friends. And it's people that you respect and people that aren't in the right place for the right reasons. They don't have your best interest in mind. You're never going to do business with them. Why? Because you're not going to be friends with them. You don't even align with them. So you're like, oh, well, how do you stop yourself from getting in business with bad people? I don't do business with bad people because my friends are not bad people. My friends are of my caliber. The only people I do business with are people that I respect and that I know are walking with honor and integrity. Because that's how I operate. Let the snakes play with each other. I don't play with the snakes. I play with men of honor and integrity because that's my friend group. It's a different mindset. That's networking to me.
Very insightful for those people. Let's say, for example, there's a kid young as you are when you were 19.
Yeah.
He's looking to those people who are like Arnold. He's looking to people who are very much idol figures.
Of course.
Maybe there's someone who wants to meet you, Tomo.
Ah, I love that.
So he's not in your caliber just yet.
Sure.
How does he enter such circle when it's closed among people?
So, you know, don't be afraid to approach, but don't expect an automatic yes. If that makes sense. I gave advice to somebody who was 20 years old. I think he was 20 years old. He was in college, wasting his time. Communications degree. So, you know, it's a waste of time. So in the West, for anybody watching this in America or in the West, like, those degrees are worthless, guys. I'm sorry. If you want to go to college, you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, engineer, architect, those are great degrees. And you need them to do your job. Getting your degrees in underwater basket weaving or whatever, you're getting these dumb degrees that don't actually mean anything. This is what this guy was doing. And he said, I want to do this. And I want to work for this guy. And I idolize this guy. I don't remember who the exact person was. It was a celebrity of some kind. like, think of it like Patrick Bet David. You're familiar? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So like Patrick Bet David.
You met him, actually.
I'm friends with him. So PBD and I are good friends. I'll see him. Actually, a whole bunch of my group are going to New York with him to go watch the Yankees game in his suite. I can't because I'm here doing business, or else I would be there. So I tell the kid, I said, well, have you approached this person? Let's say it's PBD. We're going to make the example. Have you approached PBD? I haven't. I said, why? What am I going to offer him? I said, offer to work for free. What do you mean work for free? Like, you're 19 years old. Do you have any bills? What do you have? Car payment? Okay. Do that on the side. Pay for your bills on the side. Go offer to work for your mentor or someone in the circle that you want to be in. Go offer to work for them for free. What do you need? Now, what are you doing? You're not looking to take. You're looking to give.
Provide.
So you want to come work. You want to come be around my circle. Tomo, do you need a personal assistant? I said, well, maybe. I already have one. Maybe I need a second. Pitch me your idea. Hey, I see, Tomo, that I saw you carrying shopping bags. You were coming out of the Dubai Mall. You should not be carrying your shopping bags, Tomo. And you should not be opening your own door. And did you buy groceries? Are you out of your mind? Tomo, you don't have time to buy groceries. Let me be your personal assistant. Let me help you do all the things that are bogging you down. And you don't have to pay me. And what I'm going to say is, why?
Mm-hmm.
And what I expect the answer is, I want to see how you operate. I want to see what you do. I want to see the circle that you're surrounding yourself with. And by me helping you with these things, it will give me access. That's honesty, number one. But you're offering to help me do something and you're offering for free. Guess what the most likely scenario is? That person is going to be hired by me. Because I'm not going to let this person, he may work for free for a couple weeks, maybe a month, you know? But if you're going after somebody with honor and integrity, and I see how much he's helping me, you're now worth something to me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pay you money. That's an easy way to get inside of a circle. Offer yourself. But don't just come in and, can I just help you do something? No, tell me what you want to help me with. Hey, I'm really good at social media posting. Show me.
Mm-hmm.
Show me your social media posts. I'm really good at editing. Show me.
So build your skills in a way.
Build a skill and offer it to somebody. And if it's somebody really high up, offer for free. It could work. I'm not saying it's going to, but also don't be scared about hearing no, because you're going to. You know how many times I hear no? I hear no constantly. You know how many times I've failed? Constantly. You know how many times I've fallen on my face? Constantly. Almost went bankrupt several times. I've lost in the tune of probably $1 million over the last 5 years in bad investments.
Wow.
But I learned. Education costs money. Your college degree costs $100,000. I invested in a business, in an automotive business that I thought was cool, and I lost almost $250,000. And I'm having a meeting, not unlike something like this. And my accountant and my CPA and my CFO, we're all in the room. And they're all, oh my God, what are we, lost $250,000. And I'm sitting here smiling. They look at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, hey guys, I'm like, isn't this super cool that we could just lose $250,000 and none of us are without a job? We can all eat. All of our families are okay. I said, and the business is still thriving. And look at me like, what's wrong with you? I said, what did we learn? We learned not to go outside of our wheelhouse of business. We learned that we need to stay in our wheelhouse. Don't start investing in other things. Don't start an equity trust. I learned a lesson. And I bet you if I didn't learn that, it would have cost me 10 times more later on. Maybe it would have cost me $2.5 million in 5 years. It only cost me $250,000. That's how I think of it. It's all about perspective.
The cost of not knowing something.
You
learned that.
It's
so
education.
It's a return investment on you.
Education costs money. Every failure can be a win if you learn. I say it all the time. I say, I never lose. I either win or I learn.
Wonderful. That's a wonderful, optimistic view of the world and view of how you learn business.
That's it. It's the only way you can think of it. Because if you think about it any other way, you're just going to be bogged down with stress and anxiety. It's not worth it. You can't operate in that capacity. You can only operate in the capacity of positivity. And if you really want to just succeed, it all starts here and here. This is weighted and this is weighted. If your heart and your mind are weighted, you can't function. So things that are weighing you down, let it go. It's all good. You lost some money. I know. I've lost more.
So going to back to the business now. A lot of people could struggle between moving a job to a business, and sometimes they struggle getting their first client.
Sure.
From what you've learned throughout this past years, what is the best way to acquire their first numbers of clients?
In an actual tactically or from a business standpoint,
like you gaining the experience, you had the sales, you've been able to do that. You brought your clinics. I'm sure first clients.
Sure.
Through flyers, and you said through a booth.
Yeah.
But in nowadays world, how would be the best approach to get those first clients?
So, you know, digital marketing is always a thing. SEO, huge thing, search engine optimization. It depends what industry you're in. It very much depends. Mm. Boots on ground marketing mostly works with certain service offerings. If you're selling a product, all you need to do is be found. If you're selling a product or service, you have to be found. They have to know you exist.
Mm.
And you have to differentiate enough in the industry, you have to differentiate yourself enough in the marketplace specifically where they want to come to you over the rest of your competitors. Why do my clinics do better than other clinics? Why do my clinics, we offer the same, all the HRT clinics or all the clinics that are doing hormone therapy or anti-aging or medical weight loss, there's at least 18 within a 2-mile radius of my clinic, 18 within walking distance. So why am I successful? Well, we do it in a different way. We offer a different type of value where we're putting the patient first. Where if you look into, I'm giving you an example from my medical model. People that go into medical clinics like mine, they are getting memberships.
Hmm.
So they pay a fee, they start paying a membership, and then they get their meds delivered every month or every couple months, and they have the routine blood work and everything. But they feel very much like a number, which is what most of mainstream medicine feels like anyway, right? You feel like a number. You're in and out. They don't really care. It seems you have, what, 5 minutes with a doctor, if you're lucky. So what I did is I flipped the idea. I said, okay, no memberships. You're going to pay $300. That includes your full labs. That includes your full consultation. And you have 45 minutes with a doctor. So you have 45 minutes, close to an hour with a doctor, where you go over line by line every bit of your blood work. You go over your medical history, your goals, your ailments, your aches, pains, your successes, everything. They learn about your family. And then when that consultation is done, guess what happens? We give you your blood work and all of our suggestions, and you can walk out the door with that information. You're not on the hook.
So it's a one-time payment.
To get started. But they can go and take that information anywhere.
Hmm.
But they don't. They take the suggestions that we give them and they stay with us because they're making the decision for themselves for probably the first time in the industry. That's our differentiator. So when you're looking at a business, you're trying to get your first clients, you may be in a red ocean. Have you read Blue Ocean Strategy?
Yeah.
Highly suggest the book, guys. If you don't know Blue Ocean Strategy, if you're new in business, if you want to get in business, highly suggest the book. But if you're in a red ocean, let's say, if you're selling, what do people sell on Amazon? I don't even know anything. You're selling soap on Amazon. You're in a red ocean. Everybody sells soap. Why is your soap different? Okay, maybe your soap is non-toxic. How's it non-toxic? Okay, it's beef tallow based with olive oil and beeswax and honey. Great. Guess who your client is? I'm your client because I'm big on non-toxic stuff. Go watch my Instagram. All I talk about is the toxic food and environment we talk about. Find your niche, find your blue ocean in a certain strategy and get your product out there because people are searching for it. SEO, number one. If you're in an industry where paid marketing works, number two. And I think number three, even though it probably should be number one, build a personal brand around yourself to pitch the product if you are the face of this product or offering. That's what I've done. That's what I did from an early part of without even knowing it. I was just...
You've been the face of your clinic.
I have been. Gratefully, my clinics operate without me actually working inside of it, but I still push it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I went away today, if I'm gone, the clinics are still operating. They still work very well because we've built systems and processes to work without me in it. I haven't answered a phone there unless I wanted to in a very long time. My Orlando clinic is operating right now. My Pittsburgh clinic is operating right now. My Dallas clinic is being built out with my team right now. I am in Dubai working on the Dubai clinic. When we open this clinic in the fall, inshallah, October, November, stay tuned. When we open this in the fall, early winter in Dubai, I will be here for the first 3 to 4 months.
Hmm.
This clinic is open. Why? Because I'm going to push it into a new market. I'm going to be the face of it here with our medical team here based in Dubai with everything.
And with the network that you have, you're going to market it really well.
We want to, but it's again, what is my reason for doing this? I don't need money. Truly. I can close all the clinics right now. I don't need money. I have another business that pays me so much money that I don't need to ever work again. I'm great. Okay. Why am I doing the medical clinic? It's costing me money. I'm spending a lot of money opening these things up. The reason why is because I know that people need them. And I think the way that we offer it is in a way where it's honest, where I can come to you and I can give you information that you maybe have never seen before and give you a full medical write-up and say, here's the suggestions on how I want you to be healthy. Here's what I think you can use, what you need, what you don't need. Why am I doing this? Because I want to increase your lifespan. I want you to increase your health span. I want you to live longer. Aspire Rejuvenation Clinic wants you to live longer. Wow. Here's your information. You can walk out the door and go somewhere else. But you're going to choose to stay here because I am honestly telling you that I only care about you enough to say, here's your information. Please live longer. What a difference.
It's interesting you mentioned a lot of things about the customers, but you also mentioned something about systemizing, if that's the word, systemizing the business.
Yes.
While you're here enjoying Dubai, as it is, you have 4 other clinics
mm-hmm.
in the United States
yes.
operating themselves. How do you systemize a business where it can self-operate and be able to hire the right people?
Hiring the right people is one of the hardest things. I think everybody knows that in business. If you've ever hired people, it's not the easiest thing. You're going to mess it up here and there. But the way that I looked at everything, so I'll tell you in the beginning of the clinic, I did every job. I answered phones. I onboarded patients. I was helping not as a certified medical assistant, but I was helping the practitioners with some medical things. I was doing all of our ordering. I did everything.
Jack of all trades.
I was HR. I was the president. I was the CEO. I was the front desk person.
And you had no experience prior to that, knowing this?
Besides working in the other clinic, which was very little experience, I was mostly doing sales and marketing. I just figured it out. I had no idea how to do any of it. But I've done every job in my clinic. And I can say that proudly. And the reason why I say it proudly is because I was able to then take what I learned, the good and the bad, and say, okay, how do I duplicate myself here? So if you think about, all right, I know what I was good at and I know what I was not good at. Find somebody to replace you. There's another book, and I'm sorry I keep throwing out books to you guys. Another book called Who, Not How. You ever read it?
Who, Not How.
Yes.
Oh, really?
By Dan Sullivan. Dan Sullivan, and I think it's Dr. James Hardy. Dr. James Hardy's out of Orlando, and Dan Sullivan's out of Canada, I believe. So I took a business course with Dan Sullivan. Very, very great entrepreneur, and he teaches other entrepreneurs how to take their freedom back. And the book, Who Not How, basically gives you the idea, and it seems simple, but it's not. Instead of figuring out how to do something, find the who to do that how. You could have easily bought these cameras and set this up, right? And you had a nice backdrop. Maybe it's in your apartment, your house, or maybe in a public space. You could have done this yourself. But what did you do? You found the who's to do the how. It's that simple. So in business, learn how to replace yourself. Okay, I need a front desk person. Evaluate. If you were the front desk person, which if you started your business and you're a true entrepreneur, you've done every job in your business, which most entrepreneurs do at one point, if you truly have done this, evaluate. As a front desk person, what was I good at? I need somebody with these qualities. What was I not good at? Oh, I wasn't good at scheduling. I didn't write notes down properly. Okay. Well, make sure that you interview and ask those questions, right?
So you had no experience on that, but you asked if this person has the right skills.
Because I knew what skills I was lacking. I knew things that I messed up. So I said, okay, well, not only do I need the things that they need to be very kind and polite on the phone, they need to be able to talk the lingo, they need to learn the hormones and the wellness activities, but then they also need to be organized because I'm unorganized. Getting an example.
So how do you know if a person is, for example, like those type of skills that you find rare?
You test them.
How do you know? You hire them and then you know.
And sometimes that is the case. Sometimes the resume on paper is the first step into an interview, right? You see the resume on the paper. Good. One thing, and I messed this up. So I learned this lesson. Cost me money. I learned this lesson. You ever see references on an email, on a resume?
Mm-hmm.
Or you ask for references?
Yes.
Do you want to know how many people actually call references in the job placement?
Barely anyone.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Almost nobody. And if they do, do you want to know what they do? Hi, Sam. Hi, I'm hiring John. Was he a good employee? Yes. Thanks. What did you just, wasted your time. Was he a good employee? Click. No. That's not how you call a reference. You call a reference, say, tell me about this person. How do they deal with conflict? Can you name a time when they went above and beyond? Can you name a time where they almost got fired? Can you name a time when they almost got promoted? Asking those kind of questions. Now you're going to learn about the person in a work environment that you weren't even a part of. And you're going to see, okay, does this person have quality? Or is this maybe a red flag? Or did they maybe not have the actual organizational skills because this person's saying, well, they almost got fired because their organizational skills were suffering, but then on their resume, they say excellent organizational skills. You can do this by actually calling references, talking to the people, and asking really high quality and qualifying questions about the employee.
Hmm.
Save yourself the stress because that employee is not going to work for you, but you don't even know it because you didn't actually ask their previous employment anything. Hi, John, were they good? Sure they were. Cool, bye. That's not going to work, guys. You can't vet employees like that. Vet them with some actual intent. Be intentional with your time. Be intentional with vetting an employee. Be intentional with hiring. Hire with a very specific intention. Most people are just hiring to fill a role. I need a front desk person. Put out job ad for a front desk person. What qualities do you need in that front desk person? What is going to make your business better? What is going to make you operate better as an entrepreneur? As a CEO, what's going to make your manager operate better? Are they going to take weight off of your management or are they going to add weight on? These are all things you have
to think. That's the most important thing that you mentioned. Are they going to add more weight to you? Can they handle the accountability, the responsibility of the job?
You want to be able to find people that you can replace yourself in roles. In my scenario, I did every role. So I very strategically started replacing myself in small roles.
How do you know exactly what you need? Sometimes you're like,
you don't.
I didn't know I need this. I need a CFO.
Yeah.
For example.
You don't until you do. I know it's an awful thing to say. You don't know until you know, right? It's like I didn't know that I had to structure my contracts. My practitioners are on contracts. There was something in a contract in an early employee that I overlooked. I didn't think about it. Oh, well, how'd you learn a lesson to fix it? Well, from that employee, because that employee, I got kind of, I lost with this employee. When they left, I ended up losing money or losing something, or maybe they went to a competitor and I didn't have a proper non-competition clause in my contract. So how do you learn from all this stuff? It's a lot of trial and error. But again, circle back to the networking side. A lot of lessons I got to learn from these older guys that were in business, that were in entrepreneurship, and I got into conversations, not trying to have them give to me. I was offering things to them. I befriended them first, offering things to them, and then they were in return wanting to answer my questions. Where we'd be sitting at our breakfast, a bunch of British guys, I remember, and I'm like, how do you guys structure your businesses? How'd you guys structure, your companies, the corporations and the LLCs and everything? Oh, I did this. No, that's stupid. I did that. And they start arguing and start because you're all friends. And then I'm hearing all these different ways of doing things, right? So now I get to actually evaluate. This guy said this was the best way to do it. But this guy said this was screwed up about it. Okay, How do I hybrid these? It's invaluable. I'm telling you, networking is invaluable when you can get around the right people, be real, be friends with them, and then the conversations just flow if you're truly interested. I wasn't truly interested in just making money. I'm truly interested in learning. I constantly want to learn. It doesn't matter how much money I have, doesn't matter how much success I have, doesn't matter what I no longer am looking for from a success standpoint. Just constantly being a student and learning is so invaluable.
There's a lot of information that you provide in terms of setting up the business. And I feel like a lot of people can get value from specifically choosing the right people.
Yes.
You mentioned choosing the right person will make your life either easier or it's going to make a living hell. Basically, that when it comes to that. But let's talk about a little bit some of the myths when it comes to the wellness clinic.
Let's go.
I'm going to shoot some fires and questions regarding that.
I love it. Let's go.
So, self-prescribing TRT or peptides from online gurus, is it dangerous?
Highly suggest not to do that. Can some people do it? Sure. There are, me and you were talking about this before the camera started rolling, actually. There are some bodybuilders and some fitness gurus and some people on social media that are legitimately more intelligent with these things than a lot of doctors are. We can say that. You know?
Honestly, I mean, when I was talking with a doctor and compared to a chemist, or I always considered him as a chemist, he was much more knowledgeable in solving some of the problems that I had compared to a doctor.
Of course. You know, because the doctors are taught a certain way. Doctors are taught a certain type of medicine. I have a big bone to pick with modern medicine. I think if you've ever consumed any of my contents, you will see I have a problem with big pharma. I have a problem with big medicine. I have a problem with the medical education system because they're mostly concerned with providing Band-Aid solutions. That's what they provide. You have an ailment. Here's something for your ailment. You have high blood pressure. Here's your high blood pressure medication. You have high cholesterol. Here's your high cholesterol medication. You're depressed. Here's a depression medication. Okay. When you can really look at the entire scenario of the human body, well, how old are they? Well, one is high blood pressure, high cholesterol, depressive issues, weight gain. When do all these things happen for a man? Usually between the ages of 35 plus to 50, 60. What happens at that age? Testosterone starts to decline. This is real science. You can verify this. Men go through something, you know what menopause is, for women. When menopause happens for women, they stop producing basically every hormone. Their progesterone, estrogen, testosterone, and growth hormone is basically all to zero. And women, they start having issues with heart disease, osteoporosis. They have metabolic issues, which causes them to gain weight. Thyroid crashes as well. And one of the worst things for women especially, dementia and Alzheimer's. Huge for women, especially post-menopause. Men go through something called androgen pause, okay? So androgen pause is basically your testosterone declining. So what does the mainstream doctor say? Here's your blood pressure, here's your cholesterol, here's your antipsychotic, here's all these meds.
It's not solving the issue.
You're not even going into remotely the root cause. I hate to sum everything up into saying it's all kind of related to hormones, and it's not. There are some things that are related to diet and lifestyle. There are some genetic and hereditary issues that happen. But when we look at it over and over and over again, data through the tens of thousands of people that we've seen in our clinics in the United States, they are almost all solved by optimizing the main hormone in the body, whether it's a male or a female. And in medicine, that should be the prerogative. The prerogative should be wellness, not treating a symptom.
So do you believe that optimization today, is it a luxury add-on or is it a survival for the modern man?
This should be basic medicine. If doctors did their jobs, my clinic wouldn't exist. Reality. This is basics. We are in the basics of medicine. We should be solving root cause issues. And I will tell most people, anybody that watches this, I will tell you that if you are going through any ailments as you are aging, especially for 30 plus. Okay, it really shouldn't be till 40 plus, but our environment, our stressful lives, the food, the water, plastics, all these things are causing havoc on our bodies. So our hormones are declining even faster. And our grandfathers and great-grandfathers, on average, had testosterone levels 2 to 5 times higher than us. They consider testosterone levels of 300 to be normal. It's not normal, guys. Your testosterone level should be probably upwards of 600 plus. And there's a lot of data that shows that testosterone levels for a lot of men really should be well over 1,000 nanograms per deciliter.
So why did we lose that?
We lost it because our environment is killing our hormone levels. The way we eat,
okay,
what we drink, the way we live, our sleep, circadian rhythm. I'll tell you my personal story. My hormone levels, my testosterone level went down almost 50% from my mid-20s into my early 30s. Why? I was working midnight shift as a police officer. So what's going to happen? High stress environment, stress, cortisol, lowers testosterone. Which is why I tell you guys, positive mindset. Don't worry about it. Positive. Because why? Because cortisol, stress hormones, negative stress hormones, kill your good hormones. So stress hormone kills your testosterone. Number one problem. So there goes that. I'm also completely backwards on my circadian rhythm. I'm sleeping during the day, I'm awake during night. Body can't function like that. Your body, we're an organism on this planet just like all the animals. When do the animals, except for nocturnal ones, when do they sleep? At night. They're up during the day. This is normal unless you're a nocturnal animal, and that way their circadian rhythm is completely different.
You're made for that.
You're made for that. Your body is made for this, okay? So I'm going through my law enforcement career, and I'm like, I've been bodybuilding my whole life. I started to gain a little bit of body fat. I started to feel a little bit depressed. I started to not really, like, have a sex drive. Like, you know, I'm not old. What's going on? But I knew. I knew because I studied my whole life. Most men don't even know. Most men think it's a midlife crisis. You ever hear the midlife crisis idea?
Yes.
Men have this midlife crisis. What do? They divorce their wives. They go buy a Corvette. They find a new hot girlfriend, and they think it solves everything. No. You want to know what happened? Testosterone dropped. And isn't that, people are going to be punching themselves for this if they think about it. Think about if it is what I say it is, and you just fix your testosterone level, you wouldn't have divorced your wife. You wouldn't have wasted money in that stupid sports car. You wouldn't have went to the bimbo who probably you got married to again, and you probably lost all your money because she divorced you. It all has to do with your hormones. It's honestly, it's the best biohack. HRT, hormone therapy, hormone optimization, is the best biohacking thing you can do. It will stave off all disease.
So do I have to go through the HRT route, or can I do something like take supplements that can really maximize the potential of my testosterone?
There are supplements that you can take, but the best supplements that you can do are eating well, sleeping well, exercising, getting sunlight, drinking lots of water. Oh, these sound basic. Yeah, I know. They're really basic, guys. This is not rocket science. When you start to just optimize your lifestyle, I've had people in their early 20s come to the clinic, and we would not treat them. Why? I said, well, you just told me that you're sedentary. You just told me that you don't exercise. You told me you eat like crap. You're not drinking water. You drink alcohol. You're drinking energy drinks. You smoke marijuana. Yeah, that's why you look like shit. That's why you feel like this is not rocket science, guys. This is why you look and feel horrible.
Let's make it even more simple, basic. So this is like the average of saying eat well, train well, and sleep well. What would you consider as a sleeping well? Like how many hours is considered a good sleep?
They say between 6 and 9 hours.
Doesn't matter if I sleep at night or morning.
It does.
Okay.
Your body, your circadian rhythm is naturally meant to sleep.
At what time?
At night. It's not what time. It's more, you're not going to sleep the whole night. That's not normal. We're not that kind of animal. We don't need 12 hours of sleep. We don't need, you know, a lot of us don't even need 8 hours of sleep. A lot of us can function on 6 to 7 hours of sleep. My perfect scenario is 7 hours of sleep. If I sleep 6 for too many days in a row, I start to get bogged down. But if I sleep 8, I feel overtired. I like overslept. Same. So you have to the same thing?
Yeah.
Are you?
It's like there's a balance between somewhere between 7 and 8 hours, somewhere between there. I don't know. My body just feels like this is enough.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
But you know what people do? They get overtired. So they get overtired and they fall asleep. They don't have really restless. They have really restless sleep. They don't really sleep well, or they're sleeping at very odd times. And another thing is people like comfort now more than ever. I'm sure you agree. What's
comfort zone, comfort, you know, in every shape or form, like comfortable with their job, comfortable with their life, comfortable and not having to work out the max. Everything is very comfortable.
But our environment makes us very easy to be comfortable, right? You don't even have to get up to go get groceries anymore. You can get
everything just through the phone, literally.
You're hungry, you go on Uber Eats. You want a girlfriend, you go on Tinder. You know, everything.
I'm sure you still have to put some effort.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't go on Tinder. I have no idea. So maybe, you know, but all these things are a couple clicks away and it make you lazy. Yeah. So when you have that, you know, when you have it going like that, your body doesn't get tired and everything feels easier and everything feels like it's kind of like, you know, so, oh, well, I want to sleep better. I take a bunch of melatonin. By the way, melatonin doesn't do anything. I don't know if you knew that. Melatonin for sleep aid. Melatonin is not a sleep aid. That was a marketing ploy.
Hmm.
These are all marketing ploys.
I thought it was real because it was sometimes, you know, playing issues with your dreams. If you take too much melatonin, I don't know.
You have to take a lot.
Hmm.
Melatonin, really the only way that it works is when you're traveling and going to new time zones because you want to reset your system.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be adding a bunch of melatonin when your body's not normally doing it. So you're resetting your circadian rhythm.
Got it.
But you know, what causes people to not sleep well? Blue light. Or light of any kind. I'll give you a perfect scenario. Put your temperature down to, so, do you know Fahrenheit Celsius conversion?
Yeah.
What is 68 Fahrenheit?
It'll be anywhere 18 degrees to 19 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
Yeah.
So go anywhere from 17 to 19 degrees in your room when you're asleep. Make it as dark as possible. I'm talking no lights. I'm talking not even the little red light on a TV. By the way, I don't have a TV in your bedroom. Bedroom's not for TV.
Mm-hmm.
But it was for sleeping and other things. You won't talk about them on a polite podcast.
For the ones who are adults, they know.
The adults will know. That's what your bedroom is for. So give yourself scenarios where you can be as optimal as possible. And if you use an alarm, I try not to, by the way. When I wake up, when I open my eyes for the first time, if I roll over and it's not like 2 a.m, If my wake-up time is normally 5:30 and my body wakes me up at 4:30, if something didn't startle me, but my body, if I naturally wake up and my eyes are open at 4:30, that means you had enough sleep. I know it sounds crazy.
So that means it's enough?
You're probably done.
If I woke multiple times a day?
Then you have a bad sleep environment.
Mm.
Then you have to correct something else. But if you slept through the night, for the most part, right? And that's why I suggest using, so I don't have my Whoop band on me. Whoop band, Oura Ring, something like that. Track your sleep. See what your body's doing during sleep. See how much light sleep you're getting, how much REM sleep you're getting, how much deep sleep you're getting. We have all the technology to have this data in front
of us. There's no excuses today.
No, you literally have
no excuse.
You have no excuse not to be healthy. But you're going to get to a point. That's the thing. You have no excuse not to be healthy, number one. You have all the data in the world, number two. But number three, no matter what you do, you will eventually hit a hormone decline. And then it is your responsibility to make sure that you stay healthy enough to stay alive, to live longer, not just for yourself, but for your family, so you can be the most prosperous person you can be. It's not hard. And I'm not the only person doing this. There are other medical clinics doing this. You don't have to come to my clinic. I don't need it. I don't care. I just want to offer people more help. But they're the number one thing that people need to do, lab work. Get your blood work done. Check your hormones. I don't care if you're 20. I don't care if you're 90. Get your blood work done and check every hormone, because a lot of the ailments that you probably have are due to a hormone issue that you can either correct with lifestyle, or if you're at a certain age, you correct with hormone optimization and you will literally live longer. You will live better. You're going to thrive. It's so simple now.
Well, Tomo, I believe throughout this podcast session, you've shared so many insightful things that I myself, I'm just like opened another level of something that I'd never touched on the mm-hmm. subject. Where could people find you?
You guys can find me, my name, TomoMarjanovic.com. You guys can find me on Instagram, X. I think I have a TikTok. I think my team runs that one. I don't think I even have TikTok on my phone. But you guys, Instagram, Facebook, X, YouTube, it's all
the same name.
Yeah. It's all at Tomo Marjanovic or Tomo underscore Marjanovic.
Okay.
TomoMarjanovic.com is the best way to see everything that I do. You guys can see the news articles, news about the clinic, the companies that I run, and Tomo Talks, my podcasts. It's all fun for me. I don't make money off social media. I don't make money off doing podcasts. I enjoy sharing information. I enjoy having good conversations with you. I felt like you and I became closer from having this conversation.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk more now probably because of this conversation.
For sure. You know, I think this is the most genuine way of adding value and talking to person, getting to know them.
Yes. Yeah.
Their childhood all the way to the end.
That's like, it. Now. But yeah, if anybody wants to contact me, guys, I'm very open. I will answer as many questions as I can. I will interact with you. If you really have a question that you really want to answer, you can get on Patrick Bud David's app, Manect.
All right.
Manect is a great way to do it. It'll charge you like a couple dollars. I have them all at the lowest level because I don't look to make money off that. It'll charge you a couple dollars to message me, to voice message me. You can even do FaceTime with me. That way, if you have an actual high-level question that you really want my attention on, I always answer those. Okay. I don't always see DMs because I get a lot.
Of course.
So that's the best way to get a hold of me. I would love to help as many people as I can. I really am excited about being, I mean, look where we are, bro. I'm excited about being in Dubai. I'm so
grateful. The city.
I'm so grateful to be here. I'm excited to have this business open. I'm excited to be on podcast with you and furthering our friendship and business relationship.
Thank you so much, brother. I appreciate it. Thank you.